go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 90 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. Joining us this episode, episode 90, if you're watching the video form, is the Ghost of Christmas Past from the Christmas Carol. This is one of the carolers. I think they get the nickname from those of us who have a nefarious mind as the blowjob givers, because all the carolers, if you know what I'm talking about, their mouths are wide open because they're supposed to be singing, but with mouths wide open, again, if your mind is in the gutter, you think maybe you have a pee-pee in there sucking on it, but that's a Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens. Every night, I'm doom scrolling through my phone on X. I need to do that for at least half hour before I go to sleep and or jerk off to smut. But every time I'm scrolling, I'm like, I gotta read more. Actual novels from Tim O'Brien or Charles Dickens. And every night, I never do. I want to read The Christmas Carol again. I want to read other Charles Dickens book because I do enjoy his literary endeavors, writing style, whatever the correct term is. But that's enough with Charles Dickens because he's dead, decrepit, buried somewhere in Europe. I believe he's European or certainly not American. So let's keep it moving along. I put The Ghost of Christmas Past. I purposely put it in the studio on the table, desk, whatever the fuck this is because I woke up 3:30 this morning with an alien inside of my calf, meaning I got a cramp. I ran 4 miles yesterday. Yeah, it was sub 40 degrees, raining, windy, frigid outside. And I was out there running because I'm better than you, because I'm working harder than you, because I care about my cardiovascular health and my beautiful body, that I was out there pounding the pavement step after step. I also had a USB, like neon green vest on because it was post 5 p.m. So it was dark out here in the Northeast and a car still almost hit me. So to that driver, I don't like you because you almost killed me. But maybe, fine, if I die, I die. Who gives a fuck? Anyways, I woke up with this cramp in my calf and this is how I was just sleeping. And it was like I was screaming and I'm home alone. And it when you have a cramp in your calf, if you've never had one, you could feel it. Like you go down, you touch it with your hand, and it feels like there's a softball that's stuck in there. There's like an indentation, and it literally feels like there's an alien inside your muscles, like contracting, trying to rip out of you. You want to come up? You want to come up, Willow?
Yeah, no.
Come on. We got Willow back this episode. So episode 90. Yeah, so woke up with this cramp. Willow, she sleeps right beside me. What was that? And I had to get some, I have some, what is it? Magnesium. If you have cramps, magnesium spray, like that's what gets rid of them. But like literally, the way to get rid of a cramp that you have in your leg is you need to calm down. You need to relax yourself. But the pain is so severe and throbbing and instant that your whole body just wants to tense up. And that's what you do. But you have to use your brain. And what you have to do is, just loosen, relax. I actually think I'd be pretty good in combat because I get so many cramps. I wake up with so many cramps in my legs and my feet that I'm used to telling myself, calm down, relax, be in the moment, relax your muscles. And that's the only way you get rid of those cramps, that with the assistance of magnesium spray, but I was able to do so. So, but yeah, if you could tell, my eyes are droopy. I barely got any sleep. Two cups of coffee doesn't do anything for me. I don't have any cocaine to snort. So I'm dragging through the day, but I'm going to power through. Because this is verbal graffiti, and we perform even if we are not at 100% mentally. Also, I've been doing some cooking, and I got a complaint. We were talking about shrinkflation a few episodes ago. Now, I survive off a shake and bake. I don't know if that's white trash or not. I think it is. It's similar to racism. If you have to ask, it probably is. So yeah, shake and bake pork chops, mac and cheese, Kraft mac and cheese. I don't care about your grandmother's mac and cheese. I want Kraft because I am trashy white person. But here's the thing with shake and bake. Here's the thing, right? You have the pouches. They come with the pouches of the whatever shake and bake is made out of. But then they no longer give you the bag, the shake, the pork chop, with whatever this stuff is. So you have to find your own bag to do the shaking. So how can you sell me shake and bake without anything to shake the bake with? I gotta find my own Ziploc bag. Come on, shake and bake. Be better than that. Stop cutting corners. Give me the bag. Has anyone else notice this, or is this just a Connecticut thing? Like, this is about 3 months now. I've been using these shake and bakes. Usually, they give you four pouches and four bags. I'm not getting any bags anymore, so I'm having to find things to shake the pork chops and drumsticks in. It's like I'm a capitalist. I am a capitalist at my core, but it is getting hard to defend these corporations when they keep cutting corners like this and making me have to go find a bag outside of the box to shake my pork chops in. So, corporate America, please, please be better. Give us what we deserve. We're working hard. You know, when we're doing verbal graffiti, when we barely got any sleep because of these cramps, because I don't understand how I get so many cramps in my legs, because all I do all day is drink water. I probably drink at minimum 8 glasses of water before I... Okay, I'm not going to talk about my water drinking because that's not funny. So let's just say I drink a lot of water and yet I still get cramps. Very frustrating. A shake and bake, a Be Better Corporation, and give me some bags for my pork chops. All right? Let's get into an item I found on the subreddit, Cuckold Psychology. If you have any children, please send them to their bedroom, shut the doors, lock that door, tell them to put some things in their ear so they don't hear this one. All right. Subreddit, Cuckold Psychology, told my wife, support. My wife was horny last night and gave me a BJ, nice, which she rarely does. As we were cuddling after I came, she just outright said, "You have some cuck fantasies, don't you?" I'll admit I was a little taken aback because I have never openly said this, but I have left heavy hints. We talked and to my surprise, she seemed open to the idea. We're still talking through logistics and setting ground rules, but it feels like this might happen. Not sure if I am excited or nervous or both. I believe you're a little bit of both, because you're dipping your toe or another man's penis into unknown territory, at least to this other person. But to you, yeah, it's exciting. You're a bit nervous. You don't know how it's going to turn out. So you have all the fluttering of all those emotions that make you jitter on the inside. You're excited. You're anxious. You're nervous. You're all of them. It's filling inside of you. Before we delve into the cuckold psychology, shout out to all the conservatives out there. They come up with the best insults. A cuck, soy boy, libtard. What's a better insult than, oh, you libtard, soy boy? Sometimes I'll use those words on stage and it makes myself giggle. And I know I shouldn't use them because I didn't come up with the insult. But there's something about conservatives. They do come up with the best insults. I gotta stop saying ah so much in episodes. Moving around. So yeah, shout out to the conservatives who came up with the term cuck, or reinvented what the term means. Now, to your situation, I'm not into the cuck kink. That's not my thing. Although I did read an argument on X, or someone made the stance, and I don't remember who it was, so I can't cite this person. But this person said, or this account, the owner of this account said that if you watch pornography, hand up, the B-man does occasionally, that watching pornography does make you a cuck. Because what is pornography? You're watching other people engage in sexual acts while you're not engaging. You're viewing it, which it kind of is. No, not kind of. It is cuck. So maybe I am a cuck, but I'm more of a virtual cuck, more than a real life cuck. I hang my hat on that. The difference between the two. Sorry, my vocabulary words are not coming to the brain. I did not get much sleep because of that fucking, it's still sore. My cap is still sore. All right, stay focused, B-man. Stay focused. Our guy, he's going to be a cuck. Now, So I've never engaged in cuck activity in the real world. So like, I've never had a babe and then watch a guy fuck her. I have been in rooms where other people have been having sex, but like, it's not me involved. It's just me, you know, sleeping or pretending to sleep, or, you know, when you have roommates and things of that nature. But never an actual, hey, we're gonna cuck it out tonight. So when it comes to the actual logistics and the ground rules of the cuck activity that you're going to have with your wife, soon to be ex-wife, or we'll get to that, I am not a much help to you. So I'd say reach out to a lawyer who can, you know, write out a contract with the ground rules and the logistics, and both of you sign it, so, you know, it's in law. So I cannot help you with any of that because I have no experience. So any advice I give you here is unwarranted. Now, where I feel as though I can provide some assistance to you and your wife, who just gave you an amazing BJ last night, clap to you for that, I'm jealous, is the aftermath. Now, the after cuck activity is what I've given a lot of thought to. If this were ever to happen to me and for you and your future endeavors, again, with your wife and whatever John is going to be piping down your wife. Now, when it comes to the aftermath, I believe the actual activity of watching your wife get piped down, piped out, dick down by another man, good for you. Good for you. I'm not gonna give you the rock eyebrow, you know, raising, you know, what the fuck is going on? What are you doing? No, you've been fucking your wife for years, maybe decades at this point. Like, you fucked her every which way she can be fucked. You're bored of it. Like, she gives you a BJ and you don't even offer to return the favor. So be a better husband in that regard. But yeah, you're just bored of fucking your wife. I look at you wanting to be a cuck, like being a manager in corporate America. Hopefully not at Shake and Bake, but a corporation that actually cares about their consumers. You're delegating the work to your minions, to your underlings, and you're paying them whatever the wage is. In this instance, it's your wife's vagina. but you're paying in maybe other orifices of her body. But yeah, you're outsourcing the work. Like, you've been working your wife for years. You put your dick in, out, your tongue here, up, up and around, fingers, blah, blah, blah. Like, you've done it all. You put in all the work you can. You're a starting pitcher. It's time for a relief pitcher. So who's a better husband than you? You're still like, well, hey, I've done this. I'm exhausted. I'm bored. I'm losing hours of sleep fucking you. I love you, but I still want you, my wife, to get off. So what I'm going to do is I am going to bring in a relief fuck her and have him fuck you while I watch, because I am such a loving husband that I want you to get off. Now, obviously, you have a bit of a kink, so you're going to get some joy out of this as well, but so is your wife. So it's not that selfish of an act. So I'm not going to judge. I'm not judging your cuckness or whatever the proper noun or verb or adjective. I don't really know the difference between the threes. Certainly do not know what an adverb is or prepositional phrase. Don't know what those are. Anyways, back to the bedroom. What I'm thinking about here is post cuck activity. Now, what you need, my advice to you is to have the guy who's piping your wife while you're watching in the corner of the bedroom from your green love chair. You want that guy to leave the room ASAP, as soon as humanly possible. You literally, all right, that people talk about post nut clarity, which we talked about in episode 88 or 89. This is post cuck. It's post nut clarity. Post cuck clarity surpasses post nut clarity to the X degree. Like, once everyone's gotten off in whatever corner of the room, and it's like, whoa, there's another guy in here in my master bedroom with my wife with his semen on her belly. Like, you got to get that guy out of your room as soon as possible before that post cuck clarity hits your mind. So what I suggest you do is I don't know what the term is, but the guy who's piping or going to be piping your wife, as soon as they undress, I want you to take his clothing and put it right outside the bedroom. Like, don't even keep it beside the bed. Put it outside the bedroom, so when they're doing the foreplay, when they're naked, before they really get at it, they have a hanger right outside of your bedroom, and put in the contract, in the ground rules, that this guy, this intruder into your master bedroom, he has to wear loose-fitting clothing, so it's easy to get in and out of. So as soon as he's done and he busts on your wife, he can get right outside, slip on his sweatpants, his sandals, or make sure his sneakers don't need to be tied. He get in and out, boom, you don't have to see him ever again. That's because you don't want the two of them lingering in the bed. Like, this matter, like, you're in your seat there, ba 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 ba, you're whoa, 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 and then ba 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 ba, the fireworks pop off, everyone's done, and you're in a chair, and then you realize, what, this is this weird John, like, touching my wife, and that the post cuck activity is where it gets awkward. Like, when you're in the action, the two of them and you in the corner, like, that's the kink. But the post kink activity, that's where all the awkwardness and the realness of life hits. So try to get at that as quickly as possible. So as soon as just do yours real quick and then open the door and have him leave. And then what you want to do, because you cannot have him lingering. Again, as I said, I don't judge you for having this kink and wanting to watch another man fuck your wife. Actually, I applaud you for it, for not having to put in the work anymore. But where I do judge you is if you allow this guy to cuddle your wife, or even worse, Even more forbidden, you get into the bed with your wife and the other guy, and the three of you sleep together. I cannot allow that. I cannot allow that. If I had a business partner who I learned had a cuck kink, but also slept with the guy and his wife after the activity, I'd have to break off the business relationship. I cannot work with a guy who engages in post-cuck cuddling, spooning, sleeping together. That's a no-go for me. That's where I give you the sideways look. Cannot be having that. So you want him out of the bed, out of the bedroom, out of your $450,000 ranch house. Get out, get gone. We'll text you in the morning. Now what you also want to do, you want to have your wife shower right away. So hopefully you have a shower, like master bath. Hopefully, because you don't want that other guy's stink on your wife. Now maybe you do because maybe that's part of the fantasy. I don't know. But me, without the cuck fantasy, I don't want another man's stink on my lady, my babe. So she's got to take a shower. And while she's showering, I have a fresh pair of Egyptian sheets that I take the sheets that they use, that they were doing the business on, throw that like in the corner in the hamper, and I make the bed with fresh, clean sheets while my babe wife is showering. Because you don't want to be like, you don't want to kick the guy out. Your wife showers and you get in bed together, and then like, if his spunk like seeps into the sheets, and then you're spooning and you turn a certain way and you feel that wet mark, you know, that man's goo, like suddenly it starts to stick to your thigh. You can't have that. We cannot have that. That is not allowed. So you got to have fresh sheets, because you don't want to be feeling the goo of another man in your master bedroom. You cannot have that. Cannot have that. Now I'm looking into my crystal ball, because that's all I can give. That's the only advice. That's really when I read this post, all I thought about is the post cuck clarity. Now you put it together, B-Man, put it together. I'm looking into my crystal ball, and I'm seeing a marriage that is dissolving. First of all, A, you said your wife gave you a BJ, which she normally doesn't, which means she's not into you anymore. And the fact that she brought, which means you probably do not have a great sex life with your wife. And if you not have a great sex life, that means you don't have a great relationship, which means it's going to dissolve and shred apart. But I know you said you've dropped heavy hints that you're a cuck. Wish you gave us more detail, but since you didn't, and that your wife picked up on those hints, I'm suspecting, and looking in the crystal ball, that you were not the first person that she's brought this up with. There's two scenarios I'm seeing in the B-Man's crystal ball. One, she's already fucking another stallion, and she knows you have this cuck fantasy, so she's like, well, I'll just mend the two together. It's all good. Or B, she's already brought up the topic with whoever she wants the other partner to be. Like, she's brought up to him, whoever this John may be, he's agreed to it. And then, so you're the second person being contacted. Hey, do you want to do this? And you, in the cuck threesome, you don't want to be the last one asked to join the dance. And since you're the last one in the dance to be asked about it or even be engaging in it, this relationship, this marriage will be over due to irreconcilable differences at some point in the next year or two. So hey, the B-Man says get your kink on, get your cuck fantasy, because the marriage is going to be over, so you might as well get your cuck while the cuck is available. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 90, segment 2, Willow, back on my lap. Last week, I performed stand-up. I was on a lineup at this place called Jazzy's Cabaret. Maybe my new favorite spot to go outside of Lenny's in Wallingford, Connecticut. The show itself, dog shit. Thank you, Nick, for putting me on it and for putting the show together. I loved the time there. I loved the stage there. But there was nobody in the audience other than the comics and a couple of his friends, Nick's friends, that is. But the bar itself, the cabaret, which I've never been to, I fell in love with instantly. This place had so much character. It reminded me of... what's the film? All right, the movie Drive, not that movie, but that is one of my favorite movies. The director of that movie, which I do not know the name of, he had this other film, which I've referenced on Verbal Graffiti before. It's, what's it called? Only God Forgives. It's such a strange film. The main character in it is... what's his name? Not Gyllenhaal, the other white sexy guy who everybody loves. Whatever. You probably haven't seen the film, but it's a very dark, gritty. It has like murder. It's shot in Asia. The reason why Jazzy's Cabaret reminded me of this movie is because in the movie, there's a lot of neon lighting, especially red. And in this bar, Jazzy's Cabaret, all red lighting. The lights from the ceiling, which a low ceiling, it had such character, this bar. The ceiling was kind of like metal. It was low. It had red lights. So it did feel like you were in Asia, like a skeevy back aisle in Asia, like an illegal market buying stolen U.S. products, hopefully not a shake and bake without backs. But like you're in there, and there were the separate areas. We had the stage area, which was like the middle, but then they also had, like when you walk in, there was a coffee table with a couple of couches, but didn't have too much cushioning, which is good. Because sometimes when you go to a bar and there's a couch with too much cushioning, it fades away. And you could tell people have probably been finger popped in here. But did it get into the fake synthetic leather? But this is not. But it was like the perfect cushioning where you could have four or five people discussing Nietzsche and philosophy. And then it had a bar. It was kind of a tiki bar, I think. It was a little bit of a wraparound. And then there was another room beyond that with it was kind of hidden. I don't know what was behind there. And then where my room was, where we were doing a stand-up, you walk down kind of a hallway. And then to the right was the restrooms. Again, dark lighting. And on the walls, in that little hallway before you walk into the restroom, I'll put the photo here. It's just what do you call it? The music covers, not the CD. What's the vinyl? The vinyl records. It had a bunch of they made the wall the covers of those. So it had a lot of character. So I was taking a piss, but then I was looking at the titles, and it was good music, and they were playing music there, but it wasn't very loud. It's a very, very fun cabaret. My set was terrible. I talked way too much about jerking off, but this room, what I loved about it is there were separate areas that were disconnected, but also like connected. It wasn't an open floor plan, but it wasn't a closed floor plan either. You didn't have to open doors to get to each room. You could kind of see all of them from where you were seated, but they were also kind of, you could hide in other areas too. So it was, I got the vibe, because in that movie, Only God Forgives, a lot of people get murdered. And when I was at Jazzy's Cabaret, I thought to myself, yeah, this is a place where I could get got. Like I could get off. I think someone could off me here, kind of like that United Health guy, just to come up with a silencer, pop me, and no one would ever find my body because they probably know where to dispose of bodies. It looked like that place. It was an enjoyable bar, but it did have a vibe. If you got murdered there, the people who work at that restaurant, they would not call the police. They would throw your body out back. It would go into the Long Island Sound. No one would ever find any of your DNA. It had so I didn't want to die there. I do not want to die at Jazzy's Cabaret. But if I do have to get murdered, if someone has to get even with me and you know, put a bullet through my forehead, Jazzy's Cabaret may be the place where I'd be accepting of that bullet going through my forehead. If it has to happen, hope it doesn't. But I will definitely be going back to Jazzy's Cabaret just to hang out, to have drinks, maybe get to... there's a vibe. There's definitely not a vibe. No. There's not a vibe. There is a feeling when you walk inside Jazzy's Cabaret. And again, it's only my first time there, so I will give you more detail and more of what that feeling is. But there's definitely a feeling, a heaviness to Jazzy's Cabaret. I bring all this up because it will, and it will go into what we're going to talk about next. My light is on. Okay, this comes from the subreddit, Red Scare Pod. I've listened to that a few times, not too often, but I have. Does anyone get weirdly pro-China when they drink? I swear to God, this is not a bit. I believe you. I'm starting to feel alienated as my friends are getting angrier and angrier each time I get absolutely pissed drunk because I won't stop talking about how great the Chinese government is. The infrastructure, food, culture, history, etc. My buds aren't insanely political, but say they feel isolated because of my deep-rooted love of China and have compared me to that of the Weibos for the Chinese. Am I going to have to go sober over this? No. Please do not go sober ever in your lifetime. I might be in love with you. Honestly, if you're plus 300 pounds and have a cyst coming out of your neck, I still might marry you because your personality is that great and I want to drink with you. I enjoy the fact that you don't just drink, but you get pissed drunk when you drink. Too many people I see out and about now just having one or two beers and keeping it calm. If you're going to drink, get pissed drunk. That is the proper way to consume your libations. And you seem to do that so much so that you're pushing Chinese propaganda on your friends. I want to be there. I want to drink with you. If your friends are sick with you, get rid of the friends. Do not get rid of the drinking. Continue to get pissed drunk. And when you're pissed drunk, call me. My phone number here is 203-500-7816. FaceTime me, call me. I will answer the phone. I want to hear the Chinese propaganda. I do feel, what are my thoughts on China? I'm pretty ignorant when it comes to China. A lot of us, I hear a lot of complaints about the U.S. education system today, about how history is too European-centric. There's not enough African-American and Latin-American history. I say there's not nearly enough Chinese history. Now, my boy Rudyard Lynch, who is an anthropologist, I've mentioned his YouTube channel a number of times here. He studies history, and he has this one video on YouTube. I think it's either the 15 or 20 bloodiest conflicts in human history. And of those 20, 10 are from China. So many dynasties, so many battles and wars that we hardly know about any of them other than the most recent one. So, yeah, I want to get on the phone. Get on the phone with the B-Man next time you're drinking. I want to hear your thoughts on the Ming Dynasty. Hey, it's funny. I do stand up. Lots and lots of stand-up, and sometimes I bomb like I did last week at Jazzy's Cabaret. But so it's almost, you know, if you've never done stand-up and you don't go to a lot of comedy rooms, that you'd be shocked at how often Hitler comes up out of the mouths of comics while doing a stand-up set. Like, comics love talking about Hitler. It might be their favorite topic other than penis and vagina, but I take umbrage with how much shine and sunlight Hitler gets from stand-up comedians, because Mao Zedong of China had killed so many more innocent people than Hitler even could have dreamed of killing. How many people did Hitler kill? Let's estimate 15 million, give or take a few million here or there. I read a New York Times article recently, within the past few years, and this is actually an article I read, not just the headline, that the estimates of how many people Mao Zedong killed during the Great Leap Forward in the 1950s in China, the estimates are between 40 and 80 million people, which is a wild range, 40. Like, that's, talk about not caring about human life. When you give the range of 40 to 80 million people, that's, you're like, 40, 80 million, what's the difference? Anyways, Mao Zedong killed at minimum three times the amount of people, or the number of people, Hitler was responsible for offing in World War II. So there should be much more props given to people like Mao Zedong and Stalin than Hitler gets. So we need more Chinese propaganda. And if you're getting drunk and giving it to your friends, give it to the masses. Come here on Verbal Graffiti. Give me your propaganda. I love this. I love this idea of just... See, when I get drunk, when I get pissed drunk with my friends, all we complain about our debate is who's the best quarterback and who's the best comic. Such boring, bro, nerdy comic conversations. I want this. This would make drinking with other people so much more entertaining, enjoyable, educational than what you normally get at a bar. I would love if everybody has a random villain that they're the hype person for. Now, for me, let's see. I had a friend, Dan, who would always speak Spanish when he would drink. That was just his thing. I don't know what he was saying, but he was an English speaker. As soon as he had a few whiskeys or vodkas, he starts speaking Spanish, and we all thought it was the funniest thing, the B-Man and his friends at the time. But okay, you got China, I'm taking 9/11, because sometimes when I drink, I'll go deep on the 9/11 conspiracy theory. It was not a plane that hit the Pentagon. It was some type of missile. I could talk about that for hours when I'm drunk. So I'm going to be the 9/11 guy. You're the China hype gal. What other villains can we hype up? We need a person at the bar with us that's going to defend the Cleveland Browns organization. I need someone to do a shot of tequila and tell me, just adamantly defend signing Deshaun Watson for $230 million and defends the executives who made that decision. So we need a Cleveland Browns defender. We need somebody to defend Anthony Fauci and how he's the greatest U.S. doctor, health person in American history, and defend how, you know, hyping up the HIV vaccines in the 80s that may or may not have killed more people and caused more people to die because of the HIV virus. And then he hyped, a jab that may have, it may not have been as effective as he said it was, but we need, a guy at the bar to defend Anthony Fauci to the death. We need a guy who will, or a gal, or a patron. Now, who else can we defend? Who else? Teachers, right? We need a person to defend teachers. The teachers who fuck their students, the female teachers who fuck their, you know, the male students. We need someone to defend how they are better teachers than teachers who do not fuck their students, how it makes them, that they have a better relationship. It's more trusting. They make a tighter bond that will be lifelong lasting. Yeah, so to defend teacher, student fuckers, we need that. Who's another group that can be defended? I think I wrote down a few, actually. Let me... Two more. All right. We need someone to drink who can defend the last scene from The Sopranos when the screen went black. And if you were alive at that time watching it, everybody thought their cable went out. It was the worst last scene of all the great shows. That was the worst last scene out of all of them. There is this now this revisionist history. People trying to defend that scene and how it was so great and artistic because it represents a Tony Soprano and how he always thinks that every time like a door opens, it could be the end of his life. And that's what that last scene when the screen goes black, that's what it's supposed to represent. But that, in the moment, in the time, we all thought our cable went out. It was the worst scene. I will not allow that revisionist history. I stand by the fact that that was a terrible last scene of The Sopranos. But we need a guy at the bar ordering a round of Rumpelmints for all of us, cheering on the Christmas season. We take back the shot, and he goes, you know what? Sopranos, Tony Soprano, that was the greatest last scene of all time. And lastly, okay, Willow's like, I'm not gonna be here for that one. We need someone at the bar with us to defend BlackRock and defend their stance that BlackRock is the greatest private equity firm that's ever existed, and how them buying up every entity, every house, every aspect of the American economy, how that's going to be a net positive for all Americans and humans in the world. BlackRock, obviously, one of the most sketchy private equity hedge funds. I don't know what the fuck they're doing, but it seems like they're buying up all the farmland, all the houses, and no one's going to own any property because of BlackRock. But hey, I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to have a shot of tequila, have a Modelo, and listen to a guy or a gal try to defend BlackRock's the how ethical they really are. That would make drinking much more fun than somebody with a red nose telling me how, I don't know, like the Red Sox second baseman prospect is going to light it up this year and they're going to win five in a row. I hear that all the time. China, BlackRock, teachers who fuck their students, the Cleveland Browns. We need a bar filled with people knowledgeable about all these villains and so much knowledge that they could defend them to the brink where we need to leave the bar and have a smoke break. Love it. Love you. Keep drinking. Keep defending China. I'll keep defending 9/11 conspiracy theories. It was not a plane that hit the Pentagon. But right now, we got to keep it moving. We're going to continue reading The Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence. I believe you're on chapter 2. No, sorry. Chapter 3. Are we? Where are we in this book? Sorry, this was, So chapter 3, top of page 47, we will read two pages together if you are reading along. Ah! She cried from the very depths of her being. I'm coming! I'm coming! I'm coming! Carlsberg, too, could feel his climax not far off. His ball were nearly torn asunder by the volcanic excitement that rushed through them. His huge cock was swollen to incredible proportions as he gripped it tightly with his hand and jerked it manically while his ball shuddered as they filled with boiling hot semen. Suddenly, the doctor groaned deeply and buried his hungry mouth into Pamela's drenched cunt. White, scalding male cum burst wildly onto his exploding cock, splashing onto the lavender velvet of the couch and Pamela's sleeky, kicking legs. Screams and groans ripped the air as the debauched twosome drained themselves to the dregs of their passion. Their bodies were feverish, quivering forms, each bursting in raging climax. Hungry flames engulfed the adulterous young wife. Her lust-heated cuntal walls dilated and shuddered, issuing vaporous streams of warm, orgasmic juices that cascaded over Carlsberg's devouring mouth until finally the galvanic release began to ebb slowly and they passed the apex of their orgasms. Their bodies began to relax, and after a few moments, Dr. Carlsberg pulled away from Pamela and sat next to her on the couch. He could see from the ecstatic expression on her face that the young woman had been overwhelmed and smiled to himself, smug in the knowledge that he had shared another patient. "Did you enjoy that?" he asked in a cool, professional tone. "Yes. Oh, yes," she replied joyfully. "I'm very pleased," he replied. "You've made a very fast progress. It's amazing. You open yourself very easily." "Thank you," she replied, smiling up at him happily. Carlsberg paused and lit a cigarette. "When would you like to come back?" he asked. "We can go as fast as you like with this." "I'll come back tomorrow," she replied at once. "Tomorrow." A gray station wagon roared down the highway in the early evening of the warm May night. It was 2 days since Alan Burns had left Seattle, and he was due in San Francisco by the end of the week. He had slept in the station wagon the night before, restless and horny. He had had to masturbate twice during the night to relieve the tension, but despite that, he was still troubled. He had gone over and over in his mind the incidents that took place the last night at home. And although he rebuked himself for being so harsh with his wife, he knew he had treated her like that only because of his unbearable frustration. Go suck a fat one.